Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into Miraco. It's a company that's currently raising funds on Crowdcube that's set out to fix a problem that we have with global emissions, and that is one of methane. We're going to be discussing the business model. We're going to be looking at why the company is crowdfunding at the moment, and we're going to be looking at the market opportunity for the company going forward. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by CEO Bob Flint. Bob, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Jonathan, it's great to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
So before we get into it, Bob, I think it would be good if you could give listeners a brief introduction, first of all, to yourself, as well as Miraco, please.
Yeah, of course. So I'm Bob Flint. I joined the company April in 23. I was going to say last year, but we're 2025 now, right? Yes, nearly 2 years ago. So before that, I spent around 10 years in oil and gas, working for one of the major companies in that space. Before that, I was working for a hydrogen startup for about 10 years. So I've had roughly two decades in energy, but essentially I'm I would describe myself as a techno-optimist. I've spent my whole career in looking at new technology and how you can use it to drive solutions to business problems, typically as an entrepreneur and even an inventor in some cases.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So it'd be good if you'd be able to give us just a very brief rundown. You mentioned their technology, Bob, but I think looking at Miraco's business, it would be good if you'd be able to just outline in very brief terms Miraco's technology, and then we'll drill down into the real world implications of those, if you may.
Sure, sure. So we are a tech company. What we're really good at is measuring damaging gases. And by that, I mean gases that cause harm to the planet, to Earth. So we focus on what we call the big four, the biggest headaches. So that's methane, it's nitrous oxide, it's carbon dioxide, and it's ammonia. We do that using our laser technology. So we have a sensor which is tuned to each of those gases. And then essentially we use some analytics to unpack what the sensor is telling us and then use that to characterize where the emissions are coming from. So each of those gases is hard to find, actually. They're invisible, they're odorless, you know, they're difficult to detect. So you need sophisticated technology to do that. And many of them come from man-made sources in what's typically sprawling industrial or agricultural infrastructure. So you're looking for a needle in a haystack. And the reason you're looking for them is because you want to find what's causing them. You're after the root cause, so that you can change something about your operational practices, or even in some cases, find a leak, you know, something that's broken. So essentially what we think of us as a stethoscope that we're using to tell our customers where the problem is. And then when they're applying a cure, we can tell them what's working and what isn't. And typically, our customers are struggling to get the data that they need to understand where to spend money. They're all motivated to emit less, quite often because not just because that's a better outcome for the planet, but it's also a better outcome for them as a business economically. But they haven't got the data they need to provide the fix. So we're coming along with a better solution. It's much better than our competitors in the sense that it's more accurate, it's more precise. So pinpointing emissions, it's more sensitive so that we can catch those emissions early in the cycle before they turn out to be big problems. And also we're really good at wide areas. So you know, typically agricultural or industrial facilities, they're big, complex places. That's where we're targeting.
Thank you. So you mentioned there the economics, Bob, and I think that's one thing that I'd just like to pick up on now to add some context in terms of the customers you're dealing with or potential customers that you could deal with in the future. You know, leaks, as you mentioned, or excessive methane emissions. What does that look like in terms of costs for businesses, and how prevalent is it across the industry that you're targeting?
Yeah. So if I take one example of those that big four gases, if I zero in on methane, which is the one that we're really targeting first, and if I look at in particular the energy space, so about 40% of the man-made methane or human-caused methane that escapes into the atmosphere comes from the energy sector. And the sort of figures in that space, huge amounts of natural gas, you know, an energy product, a useful energy product that has great value, about 200 billion cubic meters of natural gas a year is actually leaked to the atmosphere when it could be saved and then sold. And just to put some, you know, comparisons on that, that's more than the EU used to import from Russia before the invasion of Ukraine. So that's a huge amount of gas. And if you look back into the sort of prices that gases were going for in 2022, for example, that's about $90 billion. If we could get after those leaks and the emissions that don't need to happen, that's tens of billions of dollars of market value, even before you start pricing in the planetary impact of the emissions on the Earth.
And we will touch on the environmental side of things. Well, but just one more question on that. When you're looking at the emissions of methane, and you mentioned leaks there, is it always a consequence of an error, a leak, that's something that's not supposed to happen? Or, you know, is there a constant emission of methane from normal operations that can be tweaked and lowered those emissions over time? It'd be good to get some idea of, you know, the events that would lead for people using your technology or an alert going off, and, you know, what that would look like then for those companies and the measures that they could take in changing their operations.
Yeah, it quite often it's the way things are being used. I mean, it's quite unusual actually that there's a big leak, and you know that we've all seen news headlines showing us pictures of big leaks in subsea pipelines or even ground infrastructure. But more usually, these are changes that could be made quite easily to the way that the infrastructure is being operated, or they're just upgrades to the infrastructure itself. But you need to be able to do those upgrades selectively and really spend money mitigating the right problems. You know, go after the biggest problems first, in other words.
Thank you. So let's touch on the environment, if we may, Bob. And you know, when we're talking about global warming, of course, carbon dioxide is at the front of the conversation. But methane is a big problem. I think it would be good for listeners if you could quantify the problem of methane compared to carbon dioxide, and if there's any studies that you've brought in to your research, and you know what the actual underlying problem is, and you know, should it be talked about more in the press than it is already?
Yeah, it's a hidden problem. Methane is 80 times worse than carbon dioxide in terms of its warming effect. And actually, a small amount of methane goes a long way in that sense. Methane is actually causing about a third of global warming. So it is a massive impact on the planet. The good news is that if you stop emitting methane, then actually it naturally breaks down in the atmosphere. So think of it as the Earth cleaning itself. The atmosphere becomes cleaner if you stop emitting it within about 10 years. So it is, relatively speaking, a short-term problem. We know where to go after the sources of methane using technologies like ours. And if you rapidly make that better, and there are a lot of initiatives in place to do that, then you could buy the planet some time. So there's a thing called the Global Methane Pledge. The UN has been driving this, and 150 countries have now signed up to a pledge to reduce methane emissions by 30% by 2030. So that's quite a near-term objective, and that would make a massive impact. It's the sort of initiative that that we should welcome, and that turns into a whole raft of new legislation that's being enacted in countries like the EU and the US.
So that sets out a pretty compelling business case for Mirico, and I'd like to now drill down, if you may, Bob, into the business model. So, you know, first of all, you did touch on, of course, the energy sector, but I think it would be good if you'd be able to expand on that and maybe explain the types of customers that you'll be working with, you're working with at the moment, you know, those plans or customers that you have plans to work with in the future. And maybe for listeners to this podcast, it'd be good if you could give some idea of the traction that you have so far out there in the markets.
So bearing in mind that methane is our first active market, first gas that we're really monitoring, 40% of that comes from the fossil fuel sector. So our first target customers are oil and gas operators. And we help them find and fix the leaks and the emissions from their infrastructure. So we've got some traction. We have Shell, the global energy major, as an investor and also as a customer. So they are evaluating our technology on their facilities as we speak. We're also onboarding a major Latin American oil and gas company to do exactly the same thing, an investor and a customer. We've done over 20 deployments in various sectors to date across five continents. So we've got a great deal of experience, and we're currently doing, I think there's three simultaneous funded pilots in parallel right now across the Netherlands, Argentina, and Portugal. So we're getting strong pull, and we are building our sales pipeline. It is growing every day.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Bob, what does the revenue model look like? How do you earn money? Is it a service? Is it pay per installation? I think that'd be really good for potential investors to get a little bit more insight into your revenue model there, if you may.
Yeah, so currently we're earning revenues, and those revenues mainly come from funded pilots. So when we first talk to a customer, typically they would like us to demonstrate our technology on their premises, but we do charge for that. And therefore, we ask for funded pilots, which then lead into a deeper engagement. So where we're going next is a SaaS or a services model where we charge for everything in a single subscription. So in other words, the laser sensor and the hardware gets packaged alongside all of the installation and maintenance that's necessary, alongside all the analytics that we do to turn the data into insight. So all of that is packaged into one monthly subscription. Because my experience, having spent a decade in the industry, is, you know, oil and gas really just wants to buy an outcome. They don't really want to buy sensors and have to interpret the information themselves. They'd rather somebody else did that. And we are initially developing sales directly with those oil and gas customers. Over time, we're starting to develop local partnerships as well, and that will multiply our market access. This is a global opportunity, particularly in the oil and gas market. It's across the Middle East, it's across Europe, particularly in the US and Canada as well. So we are recruiting local partners, and we're starting to do that in some of our current projects, where they help us to onboard new customers, but also to act as our installation and support partners in territory.
It's really interesting that you mentioned there, Bob, the SaaS model, because of course that always brings in investor interest, and we can see that in the crowdfunding campaign, smash through your target of 500,000, currently in over funding. Coincidentally, if anybody would like to find out some more, please do check out the notes to this podcast, because you'll be able to find a link through to the CrowdCube page there, and you'll be able to get some more information. So the question is, Bob, why crowdfunding now? Why have you decided to launch the campaign at this point in time?
Yeah, no, great question. We are what's called a deep tech company. In other words, we're based on a technical innovation. We have three patents, patent families, which are globally registered. And we've spent some time, some years, in fact, executing the R&D necessary to take that scientific innovation into a product. Now, when we started that journey, we had a number of individual investors who were familiar with the idea of a deep tech and that R&D cycle. So they came on board early in our history. And subsequently, they were joined by some venture capitalists. So we have people like Longwall, Foresight Williams, New Climate Ventures, which is a US VC. And we also have Shell as a strategic investor. So now that we are really transitioning from being technically focused to being market focused, we're scaling. The emphasis is much more on taking our proposition to customers. We feel that is an opportunity that we should bring back to private investors. There's probably a greater number of investors who are comfortable understanding the market opportunity and the sales growth of an organization, as opposed to getting involved right at the start with, you know, an organization where there's substantial technical risk. So we just feel it's appropriate in our timing and our history. And also we're really keen to get people involved, frankly, at a point when we see that there's a possible value inflection point in our journey as we start to scale.
Fantastic. So, of course, you mentioned there that the R&D cycle is somewhat complete or towards the end. So how would the funds be deployed? How are you going to be allocating the cash from the crowdfunding round to push Miraco forward?
Yeah, so we're using it, as you might expect, to really accelerate our sales efforts. So we're placing more and more emphasis on the resources that we need in both marketing, but also business development, delivering on our existing pilot projects, but also securing new international funded pilots, and also doing some work on our digital platform. So more and more, we are transitioning to an organization which processes data and sells the insight from that data. Now, we will always have a hardware element because we have this secret sauce, the laser sensor at our core. But really the future of Miraco is about processing through analytics and machine learning and AI. And that's our direction of travel. So we're building out a digital platform which customers can access to gain access to their insight.
Thank you. So on that question of sales, I have one point here, and it's about the total addressable market and what you see that being and how much of that would you like Miraco to penetrate? Do you have any targets set out?
Yeah, so I think we believe the TAM, the total addressable market for our space, is about $15 billion US. And that's a figure which is supported by Bloomberg. So that's looking at just the methane opportunity in just the oil and gas sector, actually. There's lots of upside from biogas, wastewater, landfill, and also all the other gases, nitrous oxide, ammonia, etc., that I haven't talked about. So beyond that 15 billion, there is upside. But within the 15 billion, we think about 2.9 billion is accessible to us. We're not claiming that we are going to address every single subsector within the market. We think we're really good at bigger, more complex facilities. And that's where we think we've done a bottom-up analysis that leads us to that 2.9 billion.
Thank you. So to finish off now, Bob, investors, potential investors listening to this that want to get a flavour for what they can expect over the next 12 months, what would you say are the top three milestones for Miraco in the coming year?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, we want to make sure that the deployments we have underway are really delivered successfully. So, you know, look out for announcements saying that we have done this piece of work for this customer. You know, currently we've mostly been, if you like, under confidentiality with our customers. We now want to start talking about case studies and demonstrating the value that we're bringing to our customers. So look out for pilots and outcomes and endorsements from customers. Then I think second, it's about transitioning pilots from the first stage, which is really, you know, a validation with a particular operator, to a deeper relationship. So, for example, transitioning to some form of subscription arrangement. That really validates our SaaS model, and I'm definitely looking for that to be an outcome over the next 12 months. And then I think thirdly, it would be breaking into new markets. So we've done a ton of work in various countries, but for example, we really want to do more work in the US. So look out for some announcements talking about customers and deployments in North America.
Thank you very much. And I'll just reiterate, anybody who would like to find some more information about Miraco, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link through to the Miraco crowdfunding page where you'll be able to download the pitch deck and find out further details about the funding round. So, Bob, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
It's been great. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Really appreciate the questions.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.